Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've been tested early, and this team been tested before. And this is going to make us better. I know, you know, it's hard to swallow sometimes those losses. But, you know, this is, you know, faith in those in that group in there. We'll figure it out.
Okay, that's Joe Espada. Welcome in on a Friday, everybody. Happy Friday to all of you. Nice to be with you. All that good stuff. Appreciate you getting up with us. We're with you till 10 a.m. today. So, Seth, yesterday, I get home. I record the latest episode of Utopia Football Podcast. Shout out to Cody Stoops. Jumped on with
You're
me.
A
Thank
worker,
you.
Man.
Thank you. Got home, recorded that, and then it was lunchtime. It was about noon, so I went downstairs, got a little workout in, came upstairs, showered, and I showered. I said, I can miss the first. I could miss the first 15 minutes of the Astro game. I'm going to shower. I hadn't shaved in a few days.
Certainly you won't have to want to shower again in 2 hours to clean off the filth of what you had just seen or anything. Right.
So I shower, and I get out of the shower. I get dressed, and I come out, and it's 6-0 Royals. What the hell is going on with this baseball team of ours? Oh, my God.
It's honestly, my only wish at this point is – I wish they would, with some of these games, just can you get back to a level where maybe if you lose, I could criticize Espada somehow? I know there's people that are mad about Espada for various things, but I'd like to just get back to the point where managerial decisions even matter.
Yeah.
There's no, I mean, in a loss like okay, should you, what are you going to do? Pull Hunter Brown earlier? You know, to so you can, I don't know. I flat out don't know. That was ugly, man.
Yeah.
And Hunter Brown was appropriately disgusted with himself after the game.
Yep.
So I liked that.
Yep.
The conditions, again, I'd love to blame the conditions. It
really
was
windy. Right?
It was blustery. There was sloppy fielding that you could easily blame on the conditions.
On both
Astros
sides.
Astros were hitting the ball and making contact, but at least a few runs were wiped off the board by the wind.
Yeah.
But I can't excuse any of it away given some of their previous performances.
Dude, this one is the most troublesome of all of them because I can deal with I mean, this is the third time in 4 days where they've had an inning just completely unravel and get away from the starting pitcher. And I can deal with Blair Henley giving up 5 runs in the first inning of his first career start where he didn't know until that day he was going to be starting a Major League Baseball game. It's a little tougher with Spencer Arrighetti because I think there's a little more wrapped up in him in terms of hope, but I can deal with that. Yeah, he had a couple good innings, and then it got away from him in the third. And these innings where it gets away from guys are going to look worse in this day and age where the manager's going to try to squeeze as many pitches out of them as they can, and I think that's what happened with Hunter Brown yesterday. Look, if arms were bionic, Hunter Brown would have been out of there after about 3 or 4 runs. They left him in to set a record, a literal record, for the number of hits given up in under an inning in a Major League Baseball game, 11. The Hunter Brown one is the most troublesome because he was, and I think still is, sadly, viewed as a very key part of the rotation right now. You know, like you're counting on Hunter Brown.
I know, but man, you know, you talked yesterday about the difference between the pipeline coming up now and what it used to be before. Yeah. And Hunter Brown was very promising. And look, don't get me wrong, but the Astros have had plenty of pitching prospects that haven't worked out. But honestly, like Hunter Brown at this point is starting to feel like the equivalent of a Kenny Pickett, a Dwayne Haskins, like any of these first-round quarterbacks that you're kind of a Josh Rosen. We're like, yeah, I mean, we're giving him a shot because what, you gotta have a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Likewise, you gotta have five pitchers, and he's up here, and yeah, he's got great stuff.
Great stuff. When he can actually locate it. Yeah, yeah.
Boy,
yeah.
He throws strikes well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's all I kept thinking yesterday. It's like, look at those beautiful strikes, Sean.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, just keep putting them right up over there. Yeah, pitching machine. This yeah. guy's like a pitching machine, Sean.
You know who else liked his strikes? Kansas yeah. City. They loved him. They loved them. So Hunter Brown strikes.
Like a pitcher's machine that needs a couple new belts. It just, but it still throws straight and true.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
My God.
9 earned runs in 2/3 of an inning, 40 pitches, 11 hits, a walk, no strikeouts. You know, I don't like that, pitches. Seth. Nothing sexy without the strikeouts there.
What was the previous record of runs without an out?
Well, I don't know. The record he set was the number of hits. He gave up
number of hits. Okay,
11.
Gotcha.
He gave up 11 hits in under an inning. That's never happened before. I'm guessing the record was 10. I don't know. Yeah,
I wonder if he did it with fewer pitches too.
Like, yeah,
that'd be nice. It'd be nice if he hit both the
efficiency.
Record and did it. Yeah,
he got it out of the way. Yeah. Here was Joe Espada yesterday following the game on Hunter Brown.
You know, it was just stuff too much of the plate, and there was no swing and misses. And I thought he went in there with a good game plan. But, you know, when things just not going your way, that's just the stuff that happens. We got to flush that one out, and he's got to bounce back, and he'd be, you know, be better next time up.
Yeah, I mean, and he ain't getting pulled from the rotation. Like, they're cobbling a rotation together right now. They don't have an overabundance.
This is the problem with Hunter Brown, as I've told you before.
Yeah.
It's in trying to emulate and imitate Justin Verlander, I think perhaps he's maybe he hasn't found his true form. All it does is, honestly, it makes me more pessimistic about Justin Verlander. When I can watch Hunter Brown, like a facsimile of Hunter Brown, trying to do his best Justin Verlander impersonation and getting shelled, I transfer that over onto Justin Verlander himself. It's like I Photoshop
the same guy.
Yeah, Justin's face onto his body. This is not a situation like Journey, where I know you and I have both seen Journey in concert.
Yeah.
And that new guy,
yeah,
he does an exact impersonation of Steve Perry.
He's amazing, yeah.
I mean, vocally.
Yeah.
And it just...
Filipino, I think, but yeah.
Right, right. It's pretty... Right. He does a worse impersonation of Steve Perry, but sounds just as good.
Yeah.
So he's the opposite of Hunter Brown, who does a really good impersonation of Justin Verlander, yeah, but just absolutely sucks at it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, at least they, you know, it was one of those things, like, all right, well, at least I don't, like, have to watch this game all that closely now, you know? Like, it's, I guess I could go do some things this afternoon. Of course, I subjected myself to the rest of the game, but still.
I hadn't watched Survivor yet, so I watched Survivor, and I checked in, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's still windy and crappy in Kansas City. Okay. There we go.
Were you nervous that Charlie was going to get voted off at any point?
I was surprised by, he had a moment of weakness. Spoiler alert for anybody. I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
But then I also wondered, okay, was that something he did also just to is a display around everybody else? Hey, good guy Charlie, he's got a reputation as a really good guy, can also be trusted.
Yeah.
That I can trust this guy. And I think he kind of let himself play the fool and let Q think he was in charge and everything by doing that.
Then for those who don't know what we're talking about, Charlie is my daughter Judy's boyfriend, and he's on Survivor. He's a Survivor contestant, and they started with 18 contestants. They're down to 10. I put the number for Charlie at 8.5. I said that's how many eliminations he's going to survive. I put it at 8.5. One more, he hits the over.
The best thing he has going for him is that the only person that has it in for him is like one of the worst human beings I've ever
Venus?
Seen on one of these shows. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. She's... It's almost like.
She's next.
Venus just throws stuff out of any. Like, yeah. I don't know if she's next. I think Venus is going to make it to the final three because people see her as such a useful tool.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah,
Charlie's almost getting to the point, though. He's played. He's done a good job of acting like the guy who's barely even playing the game.
Yeah.
And people really like him, and they want to keep him around just almost based on the basis of personality. But he's actually maybe the sneakiest, slyest one of them all.
Dude, yeah. No,
whereas Venus is too transparently maneuvering all the time, and she's got no strategy. Q is just as bad as Venus. He's just really smart about it.
Yeah.
Like he's more charismatic. So, like, Q is just as blatant, but that's going to identify him and expose him as somebody to be feared and to get excised.
Venus is the type that'll, like, you're right. Like, her strategy probably is good to survive deep into the game, but not to win. You know what I mean? She'll stick around for a while. Yeah, I'm anxious to see where it goes, man. I mean, obviously, I'm anxious to see where it goes. He's possibly my future son-in-law, so I'm really hoping he wins $1 million. That would be a great nest egg.
In my head, don't worry, everybody, in my head, I'm thinking of two Republicans and two Democrats, both, who have been president in this century.
I promise.
And in those instances, they very much were kind of like, I guess he's just going to do that and get away with it. But people, they're going to elect him? Yeah. Oh, my God, he's going to get a... Yeah, like honestly, bipartisan take. That's what Venus is.
She is.
Like, there's no possible way this woman could be elected. Like, oh my gosh. Yes, yeah. Oh,
that's
she's
a really
keep
good
going.
Point.
Oh, wow. Oh, she's getting away with it. Oh, dear God.
That is a very good analogy. A very good analogy. All right. So we do what we can. You know what? Let's mix in a little Hunter Brown here. You said, Seth, that after the game he was appropriately disgusted with himself, as he should be. Here was Hunter Brown on what was the worst part of what he did yesterday.
I pretty much left everything over the middle of the dish, whether it was fastball, changeup, curveball, slider. You know, I guess maybe Perez's, you know, ground ball at the middle was a halfway decent pitch. But other than that, no, it's pretty much just a brutal day all around.
That you threw 40 pitches and you can name the good one that you threw.
He's so much like me when I'm drunk and playing darts. I just I empathize with him because I'm like, yep, you're just trying to hit that bullseye, but you're so focused on hitting that. You don't feel good about hitting any of the numbers.
Yeah.
So you're like, all right, I'm just going to focus on hitting the bullseye, and I'm bound to hit a 20 at some point.
Yep.
And I think he was focusing so hard that he was still actually hitting it over the plate, despite not having any confidence to put it anywhere else. That wins a bleeper, man.
Yeah.
It's one of those situations where I think it screws with people's brain to the point where it's almost, even when it's not affecting anything you're doing, it's affecting what you're doing. Like wearing, if you're throwing darts and you're drunk and you've got like a heavy burlap sack on your over your head.
Yeah, and so then I say, well, what about the other two starts Hunter Brown's had this year?
Right, it was windy then as well. This is the thing.
In Minute Maid Park.
Yes, it was. There was a crack.
AC.
There was a crack in the roof, and it created a pressure imbalance.
Yeah, so the Astros swept by the Royals, and when we say swept, they were swept by the Royals. 13-3 was the final score yesterday. Back home now for the Rangers. You know, back to the cozy confines of Minute Maid Park, where they are they're 9-26 since August 15th.
Right. Yeah, but the trend is good.
Yeah.
Right? Except for the Yankees game.
They beat Toronto two in a row. You're right. Yeah,
yes.
They won two in a row at home. Yeah.
They are. If you're a Canadian-based team, just watch out.
Look the hell out.
Yep. That's why they should put the hockey team in Minute Maid, not Toyota Center.
That's right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Appreciate you tuning in. Got a lot of stuff to get to. All right, the affidavit for the Shohei Ohtani interpreter indictment, whatever we're calling it, the investigation, it has some incredible stuff in it.
Everybody, if you don't think you want to hear about the Ohtani story, I promise you, you're wrong. I know we had one guy yesterday who was livid we were talking about this. You've got to hear this stuff. It is nuts.
The affidavit stuff and the text messages and everything are incredible. We're going to get to that coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. The Ohtani interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, the affidavit, the FBI affidavit, police affidavit, was published yesterday and contains all the details about how this whole thing went down with Mizuhara stealing. Turned out the number was $16 million. We thought it was $4.5 million at first.
It's crazy that a lot of people were incredulous about how he could steal $4.5 million without knowing anything, without Ohtani knowing. Now it turns out he stole $16 million at least, and actually everybody believes Ohtani now.
Yeah, right. Not everybody.
That's true.
I'm still hearing people that think that Ohtani is that this guy's taking the fall for Ohtani in this.
There's the text evidence alone is enough for me to be like, all right,
If you believe that, if you still believe after this affidavit has come out that Shohei Ohtani is paying Ipe Mizuhara to take the fall for him, you haven't read the story. You haven't read the affidavit. You haven't read the text account of what went on between Mizuhara and this bookie for years, literally years, going back to the fall of 2021 when he opened his account with him. And on top of that, I would say, before we get into a few of the juicy details of this affidavit, I would say that the fact that Shohei Ohtani allowed this to happen, you know, $16 million, I don't want to say it means he's dumb or anything like that. It is a serious issue of negligence of your own money, for sure. I don't think he's an outlier or anything. I think there's other athletes that just don't pay attention to their finances because they have people to do that for them. Shohei just picked a horrible person to do it for him. That's all.
But the only thing,
if we are taking it as, well, that was really dumb of Shohei. The only thing that would be dumber would be lying to the feds on a big case like this. You know, I need to remind people, the FBI is involved in this. This is not two kids on a playground, you know?
It's not two kids on the playground, but I think a lot of people, like if you've already got it set in your mind that Ohtani did this, no matter what, because you want it to be true, then you're going to figure out ways where either the FBI is inept or what have you.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is that there were thousands and thousands of text messages between Ohtani and Mizuhara where gambling was never once mentioned. Yeah. And like the paper trail of Ohtani's advisors like trying to find out what was going on with this one account that they didn't have access to. The biggest thing by far I've learned in all of this is that, I mean, this is a fear of mine going back to childhood, Sean. I was kind of joking when I said this, but you think about like a blind R&B singer who has to rely on his managers to handle all of his money for him.
Right.
That's what it's like if you don't speak a language and you're relying on your interpreter to handle all your money for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff can go missing and you don't even know it was ever supposed to be there in the first place.
Yeah.
And the interpreter, meanwhile, is people are talking to your interpreter as if your interpreter is you. So the interpreter is able to misrepresent anything and everything in your life.
He helped set up the accounts, the interpreter did. He had all the passwords. He had not just the passwords. He had the backup code words and things like that. All the validation information. He had everything. And there were times on the phone where he was representing himself as Ohtani. That was part of the. That was one of the funnier parts of the investigation, is that the FBI is listening to recordings of these phone calls to get these wires approved, and they're like, wow, Shohei all of a sudden speaks English, huh?
Really well, yeah.
Yeah,
I was wondering about that. That's where he got it real sloppy. Well, yeah. It just goes to show that he's not a criminal mastermind. He's a guy that just got himself into
a worse degenerate gambler who got in way over his head and had a rich friend that the bookie knew he had this rich friend and that he was good for it via Shohei Ohtani one way or another. You know, that somehow this money was going to get paid. To me, the juiciest part of this is where Ipe Mizuhara asked for his credit line to be expanded and is kind of like texting, like, hey, you know I'm good for it. I've always been paying here. And so Boyer, the last name of the bookie is Boyer. I think it's Matthew Boyer is the bookie's name. Gives him a bigger line of credit, knowing full well he's who he is. He's Shohei's interpreter. And then they get to about November of 2023, and Ipe has piled up a huge, huge negative number in his account, a huge one, to where he's not paying. And Boyer is trying to get payment out of this guy, and Ipe Mizuhara is ghosting him. He's just not answering his phone. You know, he's doing what degenerate gamblers do, and they're in way over their head, and they're not sure they can get that much money. And November 17th, 2023, Matthew Boyer sends a text to Ipe Mizuhara and says, hey, Ipe, it's 2 o'clock on Friday. I don't know why you're not returning my calls. I'm here in Newport Beach, and I see Ohtani walking his dog. I'm just going to go up and talk to him and ask how I can get in touch with you since you're not responding. Please call me back immediately, end quote. I was shocked with how many people thought that this guy actually saw Ohtani walking his dog.
There's no
way this guy, like, it just so happens Ohtani's walking his dog.
The only thing about that is I don't know if maybe, like, did the bookie know for sure whether, and I could see it being either way. The thing is, I think sometimes people have a perception that somehow the bookies are always way more violent than most of them are.
Yeah.
I think, like, most, like, the bookie in my hometown was just a guy who's, you know, local business owner who, like, as far as I know, there are never any rumors of him, you know, sinking
Same.
People in lakes with
Same.
Concrete or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It paints a picture of how things were going.
Yeah.
And that, I like, basically, the bookie thought that Ohtani was in on it. Like, but if you can imagine it this way, because people keep saying, like, well, why would he extend that credit to an interpreter? A, this is not FICO. Like, it's a bookie.
Yeah.
And as long as you keep paying your debts off, then he doesn't really care. B, he probably assumes that it's Ohtani, you know. But this is like if you had gone to get a loan, you have bad credit, so you forge your dad's signature as your cosigner, you know.
Yes.
Like, that's how you got the credit. You that's forged right. a cosigning, basically.
Yep. Here are the numbers. This is the other thing I thought was, if you want a, just sort of a the magnitude, a grasping of the magnitude of how much this guy was betting. We'll call it Ipelytics. How much did he gamble? He was placing 25 bets per day on average. Mm-hmm. 25 per day. This is my favorite part. Ranging from $10 to $160,000. And for me, as somebody who used to bet old school like Ipe was, like you call up a bookie and place your bets,
yeah.
I'm just picturing Ipe going, give me $10 on the Vikings, give me $25 on the Packers, give me $160,000 on the Dolphins.
Yeah, like, which point?
Like, I like you to think what, he though? Was doing 10 and 160,000 on the same card, on the same phone call.
In this way, Mizuhara is very similar to Warren Buffett, you know, in that, like, Warren Buffett,
this will be good.
Mega, mega billionaire.
Yeah.
But, like, if you ever seen his morning routine, he goes to McDonald's and he's got, like, the exact change for the Egg McMuffin that he's going to get.
Oh, okay.
And all of this. So, yeah, I think there's a...
10.
It's like a much, much completely different version of Warren Buffett.
Between
yes.
10 and 160. He placed 19,000 bets over a three-year period.
19,000 bets over a three-year period.
Yeah.
Forging quite a relationship with this Bowyer, however you pronounce it. It's spelled Bowyer.
Yeah.
I think Siri, when she reads these stories to me, pronounces it Boyer as
okay.
well.
Yeah.
So let's go with Siri's pronunciation.
Sounds good to me.
Let me ask you this, Sean, because you had this question.
Yeah.
This is what you were skeptical of originally.
Because mm-hmm.
I'm 100%. After thousands of people have accused me of being overly naive and believing that there's plausibility to Ohtani's side.
Ipe did it.
I'm not going to gloat too much today. But, You were skeptical that Mitsuhara would be able to just keep his gambling in general a secret from Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
Ohtani,
yeah.
I believe originally Ohtani professed to know nothing at all about his gambling issues. You were skeptical of that.
I was.
What does that now do? Can you envision now how he was able to keep it separate from Ohtani?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Now that I've, well, as you pointed out, the trail of text messages is a very telling thing. And just to give you an idea, they have the text messages that the FBI combed through.
Yeah.
Both between Ipe and the bookie and Ipe and Shohei, 9,700 pages worth.
Right.
Like
it's pages.
Pages, yeah. Like it's like pages and pages and pages of text between them, and they didn't find anything. So yeah,
but I think the thing that you were skeptical of was that since you've known problem gamblers before, is that the actual problem gambler would be able to avoid like talking about referencing all this, like just gambling in general.
Yeah,
not just whatever involved in Tani, but you thought it was unlikely that Mitsuhara would be able to disguise his gambling or hide his gambling.
That he wouldn't accidentally, I mean, you're around somebody 24 hours a day, yeah. That you wouldn't accidentally drop something. I was skeptical of that. Maybe where I was being a little too much is that as somebody who does gamble, I've never had a gambling problem like this. I like to gamble. But as you've pointed out, I've had people around me in my inner circle who have had gambling issues. Is that you, if you do gamble, you can kind of sniff out the behavior sometimes, and Shohei just strikes me as somebody who is completely naive to stuff like that.
Right, and there's the language gap too.
Mitsuhara
is able to conduct some conversations in English.
Yep.
And I've just known too many people that had like multiple relationships with multiple women at the same time, where each one of those women completely thought they were the only one and all these other women were psycho. Like, there's just, I've seen some pretty crazy stuff that people pull off.
Yeah, I underestimate the ability of somebody who is sociopathic about something to be able to mask the behavior, probably. Yeah, yeah. That's the explanation. This guy had access to all the Shohei stuff, and he went to town, man. He went to work.
What do you think, Ohtani, do you think he ever suspected anything?
No.
This is where him being like, and honestly, when I put myself in his shoes, like, he does a lot of things. Ohtani follows a lot of the advice that we all wish we could all follow all the time. Like, his singular focus on what he's passionate about, his ability to eliminate distractions from his life and to live frugally. And then also when it comes to his money, probably not fixate on the money side of things, just focus on the actual process of his job. And in doing so, it created a perfect environment where if somebody was willing to violate his trust, it was actually going to be relatively easy to do because he was so insulated from everything else.
Do you think that this was the only thing that Ipe was doing where he was impersonating Ohtani, or do you think he was doing other things?
No, wasn't he? Didn't he do something with trading cards? Didn't he? That's right. I think he was probably getting hotel reservations. Or restaurant reservations.
In front of everybody? Yeah.
I think he was trying to get like discounts at the Motel 6 by calling up and saying, "This is Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani on the line here. His interpreter, technically, but you know the deal."
Do you think he was on Tinder or dating apps as Shohei Ohtani by any chance?
Not as Shohei Ohtani, but as a representative of Shohei Ohtani.
Okay.
He was, I think he probably did a lot of stuff where he's like, "Well, I'm Shohei Ohtani, and you know I'm good for it."
Okay.
So, like, I want to send a car over for my buddy Ipe. Okay,
right.
I'm Shohei Ohtani. You know I'm good
right.
for it, and
right,
then the
right.
car would show up and take Ipe Ohtani.
Yelp reviews, you think, stuff like
that? Yes, Yelp reviews. Yes, exactly. Yeah. This is Shohei Ohtani's interpreter here. So, you know, basically the same thing as Ohtani. This is the worst Japanese restaurant in San Francisco. I'll tell you that much.
Shohei is a tough audience at these restaurants, man. One star.
Losing $16 million a year or coming off as is way
Karen,
too online.
A Karen. If I had Shohei's resources, I'd rather lose $16 million than be thought of as a Karen.
Shohei Ohtani is a toxic, banned from Texags. Yeah. Ohtani has gotten way too toxic on Texags. Damn it. The guy comes on here and is just like, everything's an emergency and everything's racial.
You know who's got the hottest Jimbo Fisher takes?
You know what?
Shohei Ohtani.
You're not going to believe what Ohtani said about black quarterbacks on Texags. Oh, man. I imagine, like, everybody, there's like, Ohtani's interpreter has like 29 different online avatars, like, posing as Ohtani himself.
Ohtani's like, well, now I know why Mookie Betts hasn't been talking to me since I got here.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right. See, that was fun. The Ohtani affidavit to the one guy who's like, no, anything else. Yeah, no, man. That was some good stuff. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's get to some headlines. We have to. The Astros, they lose yesterday. God, this is torture. The game being on replay in studio has really sucked so far this year. They're right in the middle of the first inning right now. That thing is a light blue pinwheel, the base paths. My God. All right, we'll get to that in headlines. Rockets in headlines. OJ is dead. We'll get to all that coming up next. Yeah, he's dead.
No,
he's still dead.
I didn't even know.
Still dead.
Oh, gosh. All right.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
You know, it was just stuff too much of the plate, and there was no swing and misses. And I thought he went in there with a good game plan. But, you know, when things just not going your way, that's just the stuff that happens. We got to flush that one out, and he's got to bounce back and he'd be, you know, be better next time up.
Hey, Joe Espada. He didn't have no swing and misses. He's talking about Hunter Brown there. That was Astros manager Joe Espada following yesterday's 13-3 loss to the Royals, in which Hunter Brown, sure, gave up 9 runs in the first inning on 11 hits before being removed after 2/3 of an inning. But he didn't get no swing and miss. He did have one swing and miss among those 40 pitches, man. All right? Let's be truthful about it.
Yeah, we've grown accustomed now where this is maybe the one thing that we took from the previous GM, who by way of Tampa loved in Tampa they love using those openers they have closers, they have openers, and we've got openers who come out and pitch a third of an inning.
Not by design.
Right. Yeah, just and they're the worst openers ever.
They are.
This is, you know what they are? You know what the Astros openers are, Sean?
What are they?
They're the store that's never open on time.
Yes.
When you go and there's a cluster of people waiting near the front doors every now and then. So it's like, it's my turn to go up and see if the motion detector is working and opening up.
I want to name so many names right now.
There's
nothing
worse than being it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Best Buy is the worst, man. People are, I think it's sometimes at Best Buy when you're there at 10 a.m. on the weekend, people are like agitating to get whatever they need for their gaming or what have you. People get grumpy.
They do.
It's like hurricane season almost.
Mm-hmm. Had a few people text in saying, hey, do you think Hunter Brown was tipping his pitches yesterday? Here's what Joe Espada had to say about that.
You know what? We haven't looked at any of that, but you know, we'll look and we'll see the executions and you know, if he could have done any better or stuff like that. But right now, we're just going to put that one behind us and get ready for homestand.
Hey, you know, because the problem, it's such a mountain of problems right now for the Astros.
Yeah.
And because, I guess, you know, yesterday, by the time this particular player was coming in and spitting the bit, the game was already basically over. But Brian Abreu was sure supposed to be a really important part of the back end of the bullpen this year. And he gave up 3 more runs yesterday, gave up 3 home runs yesterday, and has a 9.53. No, I'm sorry, he gave up 1 home run yesterday. He gave up a 3-run homer yesterday. He has a 9.53 ERA early on here. He's been terrible early on, Brian Abreu.
It's way too easy to blame managers or coaches at any given moment, especially early in a baseball season.
Yeah.
But it's tough with each successive year not to think more and more about, man, was Brent Strom really Strummy. Just a wizard? Yeah. And I don't want to put it all on Josh Miller or anything, but. Gosh, you're getting in any given situation where you're hoping for the best, you're not just getting the worst, you're getting the absolute 100% worst.
Terrible.
It's not fair to expect, especially the two rookie call-up pitchers when they're called up before the team actually thinks they're ready or wants to.
Yeah.
Hard to pin it on there. But, yeah, where guys like Abreu or Belak or any given Ryan Pressly, I don't know. They're all professionals. Like, I can't blame Josh Miller for those guys.
This Hunter Brown thing is really a big problem. Henley, I didn't know existed till Monday. Arrighetti is up way earlier than he should be. I can deal with that. Hunter Brown is a key piece of this team's future. You know, if Framber Valdez is not going to sign a long-term contract here, if Justin Verlander is winding down, if the rest of the guys are either can't stay healthy like Urquidy or are coming off of Tommy John, like Hunter Brown, given his stuff, is still considered a key part of this team's future. It wasn't just yesterday. He was bad in his last start, the one that was on Apple TV last week, where he gave up a bunch of runs to the Rangers. And then I was at his first start against the Yankees, and he didn't give up a ton of runs in that start. But, man, he only pitched 4 innings because he threw 90 pitches. He's not been good in any of his 3 starts yet. And he had a good spring, too. He had a good spring. So this is very disappointing.
Of those two, like J.P. France has pitched 11 and a third innings. He's got a 4.76 ERA.
Yeah.
You know, just not early in the season, nothing to freak out about there. Hunter Brown has pitched 7.2 innings and has a 16.43 ERA. Might take a while to come back from that. You want to hear the double-digit ERA club right now?
Yes, sure.
Okay, double-digit ERA club. Hunter Brown, 16. Ryan Pressly, I'll just round up or down and all
Okay,
of these.
Okay, okay.
Ryan Pressly, ERA of 12.
Yeah.
Spencer Arrighetti, ERA of 21.
Yeah.
Rafael Montero, I'll say 2.84 for him. He's not double. I don't know why I even mentioned him.
Yeah.
Parker Meschinski, 11.
Yeah.
Blair Henley, 135. And even 135, I didn't have to round down that one.
That was a triple. He's in the triple-digit ERA club.
Yeah.
We have a triple-digit ERA club. We have a double and a triple.
I had to mention Montero just because I think, like immediately you're like, yeah, that Montero. Oh, yeah, wait, Montero's been reasonably okay.
He has until yesterday. he was not good again. You know, he wasn't great yesterday. So Astros lose. They're back at it against the Rangers this weekend at home, where they are 9-25. Since August 18th of last year. All right, on to the Rockets. They lose to the Utah Jazz last night, 124-121. I watched the first half of this game. The Rockets put up almost 40 points in the first quarter. They looked really good. They let the Jazz hang around. Boy, this Jazz team is a sad sack bunch, man. Like, they've got a bunch of guys on this team that don't even physically look like they belong in the NBA. Like, they look like rec league. It's Kenny Lofton Jr. I don't think he's related to the Kenny Lofton. I think he's actually from Texas. It's Kenny Lofton Jr. He's got a boiler that hangs over his waistband. They've got guys that, man, that's rough. And the Rockets lost to them last night, 124-121. So the best the Rockets can do now is finish at 500. They're 39-41. They've got Portland tonight, and then they've got the Clippers on Sunday. So 39-41, the best we can get is a 500 record out of this squad. So
Udoka's quote that I found interesting was, habits are hard to break and mentalities are hard to change. That's why we are where we are record-wise and not achieving our goals. You'd be better off saying you don't want to play and getting people out there that really want to play.
He had to call a couple timeouts in the first half that I watched yesterday that were solely based on stupidity and effort.
Yeah.
You know, they had a big lead early in this game, and they just let the Jazz hang around all night.
It's as much progress as they've made, and as much headway as he's made with changing the culture. I feel like in Udoka's mind, he's still seeing a lot of glaring stuff that still needs to be addressed and fixed. Over the next, you're not going to fix it in the off season. You know, just get right back to work next summer or next fall when you get back in camp.
They're a better basketball team than they were, but they're not a good basketball team. You know, he's striving for good. All right, O.J. Simpson passed away yesterday. Right as the show was coming to an end yesterday, man, much like the Stephon Diggs trade, O.J. waited until his family waited until right before our show was over to tweet it out. Tweet it out from his Twitter account, which I don't know if
on the advice of Nick Caserio, I'm guessing.
I don't know if this was something the family did yesterday or if this was the way OJ had it set up all along, but he has one of those Twitter accounts where you cannot reply to his tweets.
Oh, really?
Which is probably
reply. Oh, yeah, comments are disabled.
Yeah, you can't even. Not that I was looking to reply to any of the tweets. Honestly, the tweets that I found most curious yesterday were the Hall of Fame and the Heisman Trust putting out, you know, we mourn the passing of O.J. Simpson tweets. I'm like, you know, it's okay to not say anything. I know that y'all are into the it only matters what happened on the field stuff. The Pro Football Hall of Fame people wear that on their sleeve like it's a badge of courage or something like that, that we ignore the off-field stuff and only look at the on-field stuff. It doesn't mean you've got to put a sympathies condolences tweet out the day that some guy like this dies.
I know, this is what I did not understand. I did not understand at all about the headlines yesterday. And it was the majority of the headlines. They would be something along the lines of O.J. Simpson, NFL Hall of Famer, and acquitted of murder dies. Like, what do you know? Like, do you need to explain who O.J. Simpson is first? And if you're going to explain him, like, you can't just leave it at that. Like, oh yeah, the guy who was acquitted of murder. There's a little bit more to the story than that. My God. What the hell's wrong with you, American publications?
Yeah, headline writers. What do you think the cutting off point is, the age point where people only know OJ from the Bronco chase and the murders and have no capacity for what he was as a football player?
I'd say probably our age.
Yeah. Right.
When was his last year as a football player? I mean, we were still watching the NFL.
Late 70s.
Yeah, and so the thing was that when we grew up, we were still watching a lot of those NFL films, documentaries that a lot of times go back and talk about, like, various, either Jim Brown or O.J. Simpson or something.
Yeah.
They weren't documentaries, but you know what I mean. The VHS tapes and all that.
Yeah.
So probably about our age. I think most people are younger than that. They don't even know him as, like, the Naked Gun actor, or this isn't an insult to Landry, it's just, we're like, I think Landry probably didn't understand the reference I made about the Hertz commercials yesterday, because I don't think...
Those were legendary commercials.
Yeah, most people wouldn't even realize that he was had iconic car rental commercials.
They're probably on YouTube. Go look him up if you're younger and you want to go. He's jumping over suitcases, he's running through the airport like O.J. Simpson running through a defense.
He's either running to an airplane or away from allegations.
That's right. Yeah, depending on your age. Yeah.
I've got to get to a state with no with, I gotta with get strict to a, extradition
a
laws.
Non-extradition country. Stat.
I'm trying to get to Brazil.
That's right. That's
I hear
right.
Football's big there.
That's right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Back to the Astros. Reggie Jackson was on John Heyman's podcast earlier this week, maybe yesterday. I saw the video yesterday. 60 seconds of audio from Reggie Jackson was enough to scare me about how the Astros are being run right now.
Oh, no.
We'll have that for you coming up next.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.